Welcome to Ira's Everything Bagel, where I talk with intriguing people about everything, their passions, pursuits, and points of view. Hollywood's golden age can still be enjoyed today, usually by watching TCM, Turner Classic Movies, and by reading books by authors who are steeped in the history of film, such as Joseph McBride, a frequent guest on this podcast. But it may surprise you to know that teenagers can also enjoy and learn from the classic films of the 30s, 40s, and 50s. And my guest today is Simone O. Elias. She's author of Old Films, Young Eyes, a teenage take on Hollywood's golden age. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all the usual places. And for everything about Simone, go to Simone O. Elias, E-L-I-A-S, SimoneOElias.com. And you can follow her on Instagram at Teenage Golden Age Book. Simone, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I was intrigued by the fact that you're a relatively young teenager and you're obsessed with movies, and you started to watch a lot of the golden age of Hollywood films and ended up writing a book about it. So tell us a little bit about that story. How did it start where you became interested in films produced way before you were born? In some cases, way before I was born, which is hard to believe, but true. But yet you found redeeming qualities in them, which you should, or people should, because of the fact of the scripts, the talent before the camera and behind the camera. So rather than me tell your story, I'd like to hear a little bit about it from you.
Yeah, so I started out about 2 years ago when my good friend, who was really into classic movies, asked me to help her create a podcast about them. So I obviously had to start watching them, and I got really into them and started writing scripts for the podcast. I started by watching 1950s movies, and I loved musicals like Audrey Hepburn and Funny Face and Singing in the Rain. And then I sort of advanced my way backwards into 1930s movies. And so I found a lot of redeeming qualities, as you said, with these movies. And they gave me a lot of joy and taught me a lot of things about the past.
When you first started watching the films, you were watching it obviously from a sensibility of a teenager in the 21st century. And we think of teenagers today a different way than we did 20 years ago, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, etc. But clearly you're looking at it and you're seeing things that we'd be surprised that teenagers would see. So what were some of these qualities that you saw that you ended up writing a book about, and which I think is great because you're going to interest a lot of people, including your own age group, into looking at these, what I call classic films, and having these qualities that are timeless. Not so much redeeming as it is timeless. Some of the themes, some of the acting is just timeless.
Yeah, so I really found so many redeeming qualities in these movies. I wrote every chapter about a movie that I thought was really modern, and or a genre or a decade of film or specific movies in, you know, a category that I thought had a lot of modern relevance. For example, in the movie What's So Bad About Feeling Good from 1968, which basically predicted the pandemic, there's movies from the 1930s that are very forward in their talking about female roles, which I found to be really interesting today. And I thought that they would be ahead of their time, even if you watch them in the modern day. And pretty much every one of the movies that I talk about in my book has some sort of redeeming quality or something that makes it different and something that makes it modern. And I found that there were a lot more of those movies than people usually think.
What's the reaction to your contemporaries when you talk about classic films, Hollywood's golden age? Do they look at you and go, we have no idea what you're talking about? Or are you able to convince them to at least try it? As you mentioned, your friend had you try it because you were writing scripts for it. So that's how you got into it. What's been the reaction of some of your contemporaries?
Well, actually, a lot of people, I mean, teens that I meet have watched classic films and enjoy them. And the ones that don't, yes, I get the skeptical eye, but I'm used to that because I'm a teenage writer, and people are confused often with what I do. But I've found a lot of people who actually really love these movies, and some of my best friends are really into them too.
That's great. You mentioned just a moment ago that some people are confused because you're a teenager writer. Why would they be confused? Are they amazed that you're able to write or that you can come up with these concepts? Or what is it that confuses them?
I think it's the ambition that I have because I got this book actually published, and a lot of people just write essays for their high school. I have a different approach to school. I do independent study. So I sort of have a career as much as you can have a career as a teenager. And that confuses people. They're like, why won't you just wait until you're an adult? But I didn't want to. I thought, my perspective has a lot of value in the world, and why not do it now?
Well, the interesting thing is that you're writing from a teenage perspective, but it's an unusual teenage perspective in this sense, just by based on what you just told me. It's independent study. It's a much more comprehensive approach to what you want to do, publishing a book as opposed to writing an essay that would be in some newsletter or something. So you can see why people would be, in a sense, confused about that. But at the same time, you're clearly understanding of what the importance of these films are. You have an ability to write. So it makes perfect sense that you would write a book. I mean, to my way of thinking, that's the case. What's the reaction of what I would call, quote unquote, adults to your passion and to your writing? And I'm not even going to limit it to parents. I just think, in general, people that are not teenagers, but who can appreciate another point of view, which is what this is. It's another point of view. It's more of a demographic different point of view, but it's still mature point of view.
It really depends. If the person you're talking about has known me for any period of my life, they'd know that I have, I've been writing since I was at, since as long as I can remember. I do odd things. Like I have weird obsessions. I learned magic tricks when I was 9. I was really good at them. I've tried basically every fruit. I have odd obsessions, and I've always channeled them into my writing. And so now it's just a longer one that has to do with movies. So most people who know me aren't that impressed because I've been doing this for a long time.
Well, you
But
said,
the people who don't know me are often very impressed, and they're sort of just dumbstruck. Like, I don't really understand, how did you do that? A lot of people are thinking I self-published or something.
You said obsessions, but I don't know that it's obsessions. I mean, when I think back, I started learning magic when I was a kid, and I didn't view it as an obsession. I think it was more an interest in something unique, and that led me to practice. Of course, they were cheap tricks that you bought at the magic store that were made out of plastic. And when I became a young adult, then I ended up getting the brass version of the plastic version and much more developed magic. So I don't know if you carried that interest, you call it obsession, which is fine. That's your definition. Did you carry that into your teenage years, such as you mentioned magic? So is that also still an interest of yours?
I guess I'd call it a passion, everything that I do. Well, I don't know if I can still do some magic tricks. My grandfather was a teenage magician, and he taught me a bunch of different things. But yeah, I can still do some. It's in my repertoire,
That's great. Learn the French drop. That's the best thing. That's easy. You can do it with any coin anywhere at any time. So, and the invisible deck. Learn the invisible deck and you'll be fine.
I had a deck with just five of hearts, and I would be like, I can make your card come to the top of the deck. But it was very short because people were like, you just have that in all the cards. And I'm like, yeah, I do.
Well, getting back to the golden age of Hollywood, when you started to write about these films based on you watching the films because of your friend, and you did a podcast with her as well, correct?
Yeah, I did. It's called Teenage Golden Age. It's still going. I was actually recently interviewed on it, and now we mostly interview authors of classic film books. Yeah.
Oh, very good. Okay. Well, you should get hold of Joseph McBride. He's written many, many books, and I'm going to be talking with him next week about that. But he's written many books on Orson Welles, etc. So look him up. I'm sure he'd be happy to be a guest on your show.
I believe I actually researched him for the book. I think I cited him or read some of his books. Yeah.
Good. All right. Excellent. When you started to look at these classic films, was there one unifying theme, in addition to what I would call quality, among these films that you recognized So, for example, quality was consistent with most of the classic films or the films of the golden age of Hollywood. Were there any other themes that were consistent across these various genres?
Definitely the themes that I saw represented across these had to do a lot with what was happening at the time. For example, it depended on what kind of decade it was. For example, there were a lot of war films in the 1940s, and pretty much every movie had some sort of relation to the war. And the same with the Great Depression in the 1930s, same with, the civil rights movement in the 1960s. I could find these connections in pretty much every movie. So I found that they really reflected the times.
So you were watching films that had themes connected with the reality of the society at the time, not so much fantasy films or light comedy that really didn't connect with a major theme. Would that be fair?
I did watch those, and I found that those also connected with the theme of the time.
Oh, okay.
What you joke about is often a struggle or what is reflected in the culture at the time. Yeah.
Can you give us a couple of examples of some of the films that made an impression on you, both on the comedy side and on the drama side?
Yeah, so I found that in the 1960s, I wrote a whole chapter on the beach party movies, where it was basically these teenagers in their swimsuits frolicking around a beach. And I thought, this has a lot to do with, the wild and free things that the teenagers wanted to do in the 60s. They wanted to rebel against their parents. They wanted to be free and express themselves. And so I was like, this isn't just a comedy, light film. It also reflects exactly what the teenagers were thinking at the time. And same with noir films, which really talk about murder and all these dark things, but they really have to do with sort of the post-war mindset of darkness, and I thought also that the 1950s movies about the 1950s housewife, though pretty much every movie in the 1950s had some kind of thing to talk of, I mean, like a reflection of how people felt about women at the time. So I definitely think there were a lot of those.
As I understand it, your great-great-grandfather's brother was a screenwriter in Hollywood. How did you find out about him?
My grandfather was actually, he met him and he left him a letter on his bar mitzvah. So I learned about him from my grandfather. So my great great grandfather was he was an I think an accountant, and he had, I think, four brothers. One of them helped found the Jewish Community Center. He was Lewis Kraft. And so I learned about him also from my grandfather. And then the other one was High Kraft, who was a blacklisted screenwriter and playwright. And he wrote Top Banana and Stormy Weather, which is one of the first all-black musicals. And he wrote with Billy Wilder. So I found that I had a real-life connection to these films, and that made it a lot more meaningful.
There was also a book about how the Jews created Hollywood, and it was a you probably have read that book where it talks about how it came to be that so many Jewish pioneers were involved in the creation of Hollywood because they couldn't get work in other fields, and this was a brand new industry created starting in the East Coast and then moving to the sunny orange groves of Hollywood. And it's a fascinating background
An
to,
empire of their own, right?
yes,
Yeah.
an empire of the Rome. Exact. Thank you. Neil Gabler, I believe, was the author, or Gabler. Apologies, Neil, if I got your name
No, the first quote that he quotes in that book is High Craft. So I do know
wrong. Ah,
that book. Yeah.
yeah, there is a connection. So, yes, an empire of their own. And it was a really good analysis of how that came to be. There was this big brouhaha a year or so back when they had a display in Los Angeles, the Academy, and there was no reference to any of these pioneers. We're talking about the Warner Brothers. We're talking about Mayer. And then also, well, if you go even further back, you have
Selznick.
Adolph Zukor with Paramount,
Yeah, Selznick.
Selznick, right? And others. So there was this great group of very rough Jewish immigrants who were not necessarily intellectuals, but their main focus was on providing and creating entertainment for people. And certain studios at that time had messages in their movies. Warner Brothers particularly had some in there as well. MGM was more of the fluff type of situation. But it's a background. So how do you see that from your perspective now, looking at all these Jewish pioneers creating this Hollywood situation where you had the golden age of Hollywood, where you had, they were factories, but they were dream factories. So you had all of these films being produced. I'm being very inarticulate at the moment. I think it's from lack of sleep, but I think you get the drift of where I'm going with this.
Thanksgiving was last night, so of course.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah, I went to the exhibit on those founders at the Academy Museum.
Yes,
And
that's what I was referring to a moment ago, right? The Academy Museum. And they originally didn't have the Jewish founders at all as part of it, and there was a big brouhaha about it, and then they've now incorporated that.
it was a small exhibit. They had, I think, a documentary playing and a little plaque on each of the founders, and then a little diorama of how the studio sort of popped up around Los Angeles. So it was kind of a small thing, but it really, they made sure to talk about, the dark sides of these, sort of tortured immigrants and how they had a really hard time in America and how they treated their stars badly, probably because of that trauma, and how they ran their empires, sort of egotistically and like, oh, I'm this big ruler. And they were careful to talk about that. And I think they got in trouble because they didn't mention that stuff. But I also found that was sort of a push and pull sort of dynamic. They were these powerful Jewish people, but then they were also not using their power as nicely as they probably could have. So it was a very interesting exhibit, and I talked about that dynamic a lot in my chapter.
Yes, it's also too that they did not really make films about Jewish people because they were concerned that there would be backlash if there was that. And so ever so often there was a film. There was one about anti-Semitism, or a couple of them, but that was about it. There was no Jewish theme films. That was really more left to places like the Yiddish Theater, et cetera, which perform live in those days, in the early days. What was your take on your research on these founders? Were there any ones that you felt redeemed themselves in the larger sense, even if they were a little bit rough around the edges and treated their stars badly?
I think it also makes sense in this situation to separate the art from the artist and think about how many wonderful movies these guys made. And despite the fact that you might not have wanted to be one of their stars, they still have a lot of redeemable qualities, every single one of them, for putting out all these films that really shape people's lives. And I agree, there weren't that many movies about Jews in Hollywood. And I think there was one, Gentlemen's Agreement,
Right.
1940s, but that was really the first one. And there was this underlying thought that the Jews controlled Hollywood and they wanted to make everything scandalous and control the messages that they deployed to the public. So I think they really tried not to send out those Jewish messages for fear of that message being more widespread of them controlling everything. And yeah, so I think that's probably one of the reasons why there aren't that many Jewish films in that era.
And in Gentleman's Agreement, it was Gregory Peck who played in it and started it and was not Jewish.
Yeah, that movie was about him as a journalist pretending he was Jewish, which would not fly today, to see how the prejudices unfolded and wrote about them. But there weren't a lot of Jewish characters actually in it.
When you started to research the book, did you contact any of, at this point, it would probably be relatives of any of the participants in the golden age of Hollywood. Were you able to contact anybody and interview them, talk to them, get their perspective?
I don't think I actually talked to any of them, but I did get a review from the great great granddaughter of the head of Paramount, which was pretty cool.
Nice.
Yeah, I wish I could have talked to those people, but it is kind of hard to research and find them, so I focus more on the films themselves and stars themselves, but I would maybe sometime.
Did you see the correlation in a way between the technology of those days and that again, 30s, 40s, and 50s, and the technology of today, where you can do so much digitally, and yet the talent seemed to be more intense in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. Did you see that divide?
Yeah, they obviously didn't have computer generated stuff back then. It was all just actually having to film something. Like there's this famous photo of, the MGM lion, of them actually filming the lion roaring, and I assume that was computer generated. So everything really had to be filmed, which is vastly different from today, where we have all these movies that are just completely drawn and computer generated.
Did
But
you? Yes, go ahead.
yeah. But I think as you said, the talent was a lot stronger, and there were a lot more, great singers and magnetic personalities. So it really made up for it.
I think back to the logos that the various Hollywood studios used. And again, this was in a non-digital age, and they were able to create these very unique logos that spoke to what their studios stood for or represented. And again, it's that without using digital tools, they were able to do this. And then you look at somebody like Walt Disney, one of the few non-Jews, by the way, in Hollywood, and what he created, again, the animation and live action without the aid of computers, and was still able to create this magic that has endured over many, many decades. Did you include any of the Disney films in your research or in your writing from those years or those decades?
He has a lot of, widespread influence, but I'm sure on all these movies I saw several references, but I didn't get actually into the animation or even the horror movies because there were just frankly so many to cover. So I didn't get to do that, no.
I get the feeling that you're going to end up in, unless you change your obsession, and I'm using your word, unless you change your obsession, I have a feeling you're going to end up running a lot more about film and becoming perhaps, oh, the next Leonard Maltin, and you're just going to write about films and summarize them and give your take on them.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I would like to write some films myself.
Well, that would be good too. Yes, I could see you producing them too. I don't think you have any boundaries that are keeping you back,
No,
especially.
I think I could write anything that I want to at this point. I've written like so many different genres of and stories, so I don't confine myself to one thing, but I certainly do love movie writing, which I'm sure I will do more of.
And you have the software now to do scripts. Make it easier to format scripts as opposed to, again, the 30s and 40s and 50s, where they didn't have any software to lay out the format for the script. So
Yeah,
it makes it
sure.
easier for you in that sense. What's the reaction to your podcast with your friend? Do you hear from a lot of different people, and do you hear from a lot of different people from different age groups writing you and saying that they enjoy the show and that they were there again, their word, they're surprised that you have this knowledge and your friend has this knowledge about these films?
We do. We get a lot of, we have followers on Instagram who will, DM us and tell us how much they love the podcast. We have a lot of teens who follow us as well. So we certainly do get feedback.
Do you find that there's more of the people that follow you and are going to read this book? Do you think there will be more teens than adults, or do you think it'll be a mix?
It'll definitely be a mix. We have a lot of adult followers of our podcast. We've got a lot of teens too. We've had teens on our podcast, which has been so great. We've written scripts with them and collaborated, which was really fun. But I also do think obviously adults are interested in the teenage perspective, and I think it's useful to them too. So I've also had a lot of older people interested in the book, which is great too. So I'm not, although it is my teenage take, it's not meant to put out any other group,
Right. No, you're writing from your perspective, but for everybody. It's
Yeah.
not, yes, you're not limiting it to your age range. I mentioned in the beginning about Turner Classic Movies. Do you watch Turner Classic Movies and get a lot of your source material from them?
I do. I've been in conversation with TCM, so,
I see where you're going with that. That'd be great.
but I also met Alicia Malone, which was like, oh, so great. And yeah, I go to TCM Fest every year. They're sort of the center of the classic movie universe. And I love watch TCM, which allows me to see the movies without, having cable So I watch a lot of that.
No, that's great. I know that there was a point where TCM was going to be absorbed by a different company, and there was concern that that would affect TCM, but yet evidently no. They got a lot of feedback from Spielberg and other people high in the film industry about maintaining the purity of that presentation.
I thought it was really important that they did that, and I'm really happy that it still exists, because if without TCM, the classic film community would have no center. So it's really great that they're keeping going with it.
When you go to those annual events, are you the youngest one there?
I think I've said this a couple times, which is funny. A lot of people go with their grandparents. That's the youngest people I've seen. Ones who are with their grandparents, if they're young. And then a lot of people are middle-aged and they're surprised I'm there, and that kind of thing. But it is a lot of those people, not a lot of young people yet.
Yeah, I think it'll change. What's the main thing you want people to take from your book before I let you go? What's the main thing, the main point, the sense of what you want to communicate with the book as a whole?
I think what I wanted to communicate with the book as a whole was that the past is incredibly important to learn from, and we can gain a lot more from it than we think. And also that the teenage perspective is important and it changes a lot of parts of the world.
And why is a teenage perspective important?
Because it's young and unencumbered and feel like you can do anything and nothing at the same time. It's very hopeful, and it has changed a lot of things in the past.
That's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Simone O. Elias. She's author of Old Films, Young Eyes, a teenage take on Hollywood's golden age. It's available on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, and all the usual places. For everything about Simone, go to simoneoelias.com, and you can follow her on Instagram at Teenage Golden Age Book. That's Teenage Golden Age Book. And Simone, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
And join us every Thursday for a new schmear on Ira's Everything Bagel.